So we're going to talk about Windows 8 for the next 3.5 hours. No, I'm kidding. For about the next, what do we have, 45 minutes or so? I want to talk a little. I've already talked a little bit about Windows 8 just while we were warming up there from the end user's perspective. Also want to talk about the runtime environment and how you develop software for that and introduce you to something called the Metro User Experience. And talk a little bit about the application store and what the business opportunity for developers is when it comes to building apps for Windows 8. So the Windows 8 user interface has been completely reimagined. It does build on top of Windows 7, so everything you run on Windows 7 today will run on Windows 8. All the hardware that you're running on Windows 7 and even some prior versions, hardware platforms will still work for Windows 8. And one of the interesting things about Windows 8 is that in the past it used to be, you would upgrade to an operating system and you would have this expectation that your existing hardware would run a little bit slower because the new operating system was more powerful, was more complex, took more memory, took more CPU. I actually find that things run faster in Windows 8. There's a tremendous amount of optimization when it comes to processing, memory utilization, battery life. So in general, everything runs pretty fast. The user interface, as you've seen, is built for touch first, but also supports mouse and keyboard. So as a developer, that's really nice. You code for, and when you're building the Metro apps, you code for one style of user interaction, but mouse and keyboard you get for free. The Start menu and the Metro style apps are very fast and fluid, very responsive type of user interface, which is great. So I need to flip over. Do I just press two here? I'm on number two, but I don't see my laptop. The HDMI. There we go. And this is cut off. I'm running on widescreen, so this should be interesting. So we talked about pinching to zoom and getting this semantic zoom. That's one of the things that you'll see not just in the Start menu for navigating larger collections of tiles, but also within your application when you're dealing with lots of categories or detailed information. This is one of the user interface metaphors that you have. There is a minimum requirement on resolution, and I'm a little bit afraid that we don't have it here. So I'm going to go and run the finance application. So this is one of the applications that comes with Windows 8 out of the box, and it is a Metro style app. And one of the things you'll see about Metro style apps is they're Chrome-less. There's no min-max button on the side. There's no frame around the window. They take full screen resolution. This particular application is a fairly flat panoramic user interface. So I can slide through lots of different things in here. I can also semantically zoom out here to get broader categories. So I pinch to zoom out. I can come into my watch list directly and navigate to that specific part of the wide panorama. I could come into the Microsoft app, so I'm sort of drilling down into a level of hierarchy here. And our internet connection's a bit slow here. See how the Microsoft stock is doing this month? Ooh, not so bad, not so good this month, but over the course of the year, yeah, it's doing pretty good. And I can scroll to get Microsoft's specific news and statistics, lots of good information about that. And one of the things the way you use the touch interface with Windows 8 is swiping gestures from the edges of the screen. So if I'm swiping from the right-hand side of the screen out, this is going to give me my charms bar. More importantly, that brings me back to the Start menu. So I can see on my finance tile here, I have a summary of information, of up-to-the-date information. This is the primary tile for that application, and it's used for launching it. And you can see when I come back to the Start menu and I enter that app again, it leaves me right where I am. Now I'm on the Microsoft tab here. One of the other gestures that you have is swiping from the bottom. This is going to bring up the context-sensitive app bar. And one of the things you can do here is you can, I'm going to remove this tile, I'm going to add it back, is you can add secondary tiles. So this is a subcategory of information within my app. I'm going to pin that tile. I'm going to give it a name. I'll just call it MSFT. And then if I come back to my start screen, and I think it'll be at the very end here, I have a secondary tile for the same application, but the notification information is specific about that stock quote. So this is something you can do in your application as well. I'm going to open up another application here. I'm going to open up my music application. And I'm going to use the swipe from the right gesture to bring up the charms bar. One of the common elements that you have in every Metro app is the ability to search. You don't have to implement this, but it's an option. So I'm going to search for Madonna here. And you'll see that that's searching within my application. But I can also choose to search within other applications as well. So there's a Vimeo application. And this is going to go out to the web and search Vimeo for results as well. I'm going to go back to my music app. And I'm going to play this. I'm not sure if the audio is hooked up or working. No? Well, I'll just... Yeah. So this is a nice full-screen app. But one of the interesting things about this app is that I can have this music go on in the background. So if I swipe from the left, that's going to allow me to sort of alt-tab between my applications. I can go back to the start menu, and I can continue on doing my work. I can go to the desktop, and I can use my traditional desktop apps, and that music continues to play in the background. That is something you have to code for specifically, that background audio or other background task processing. I'm just going to go back to that music app. One of the other things you have when it comes to building Metro apps is not just this full screen layout. There's obviously a portrait layout as well, but we can swipe from the left-hand side. Try doing this. And I can take another application. Sorry, I just alt-tabbed to that. I didn't mean to do that. I'm going to swipe out, and I'm going to bring my... Well, that's not what I wanted to do either. Come on. Let's try it with this app. I think it might be problematic with the resolution. It is. What I'll show you in a screenshot later is this notion of snapping an application. I'll try it one more time. Nope. No, won't let me snap. So, I mean, one of the views there is just to drag from the left and back, and it will give you a list of all your running applications. But you should be able to also slide and have your application, two applications docked at the same time. You could have your desktop app, your music app, or your mail running in a very thin vertical strip along with something else. So you can have two applications running at the same time. The desktop obviously allows you an unlimited number. That's one of the other things you have available to you. The other thing you have, I'm just going to come back to my music app. One of the other charms you have is the share button. So this is what's known as a built-in contract. You can have multiple types of contracts, but the sharing contract is something that you can support in your application as a client or as a provider. So in this particular case, I'm allowing my application user to share the context of that application, and you implement what that means. I have one application that's registered as the receiver of this information, which is the mail application. So I can pick the application that I want to share to. And then from in here, I can put in my email address or whatever that application prompts me for. You basically have to provide a user control for this user interface to work. And then you have one application talking to the other. Sharing is just one type of contract. You can implement other types of contracts. And even within a contract, there's different options, whether you're sharing text, a file format, a specific data contract. Lots of different options there. So that's the charms menu. Search and share are the two built-in contracts that you can implement out of the box to allow applications to talk to each other. All right, so I want to go back to my slides. So a few things you should take away about Windows 8 here is that it's a very fast and fluid user experience, these Metro types of applications. Very responsive, they're very alive, they're Chrome-less. It's a very immersive type of experience. They're full screen. We're focusing the user on the content of your application, not the operating system. You're building touch first. You get keyboard and mouse for free after that. And these applications can talk to each other. These Metro apps have standard ways of integrating with each other. Perhaps the most important thing is that these will run on a variety of hardware devices that are in the field today. All of the Windows 7 hardware devices out there will work, and a new generation of devices that are being built specifically for Windows 8. I want to talk a little bit about the development experience for Windows 8. Obviously, there's some core Windows operating system services available to you. Today, we're building on top of the Windows Core OS services. We're building desktop apps with either C Sharp, C, C++, Visual Basic, and we're using either Win32 or the .NET framework, the .NET runtime, or Silverlight, a subset of that. And of course, people are still building tons of web apps with HTML and JavaScript that are accessible through Internet Explorer. But what we're introducing with Windows 8 is this notion of a Metro-style app, these full-screen apps that run inside of sort of a part of the Windows operating system known as Windows RT, or Windows Runtime. So this Windows RT, it has an API. It's a very client-centric API. You're not building server-type apps in this API. This is very similar to the .NET client profile. It has APIs for talking to services and to data, dealing with graphics and media, local devices and printing. It has an application model for packaging things up and deploying them, a manifest for working within that. And then on top of that, this is the area where developers will be spending all of their time, is the languages and layout styles that they have. And there's two very specific types here. One type is XAML. How many people have built WPF or Silverlight apps? So you, not too many, but this is sort of the very modern, beyond Windows Forms, modern desktop layout engine. And it's a markup-based engine that supports a lot of rich media and user interaction. You can build XAML applications with C#, VB, C++, and C. And this is new for Windows 8. You can also build these very immersive type of applications with HTML and CSS and JavaScript. There's a new Chakra JavaScript engine, which is high performance. And there's a bridge right from in these Metro apps right to the Windows RT APIs. So using WinJS, I can use any of my own JavaScript libraries, but the WinJS library will allow me to talk directly to the Windows RT API. Bruce will demo that HTML side in just a minute. I want to talk a little bit about the execution environment of these applications. So when do applications run? Well, you know how a desktop application runs. You start it, and the user is in control of the lifetime of that application. When they start it, when they shut it down, that's controlled by the user. Metro apps are controlled by the operating system. It manages the lifetime of these applications. So let me explain how this works. If I start a Metro app, it's going to start running, and it's going to be in the foreground on my application, on my machine. If I go and start another Metro app, that first Metro app is going to drop down into a new state called suspended. There's a short delay, and that application is notified that it's being suspended. When I start another app, app 2 is going to be suspended. And when I start app 4 and 5, all those other apps that I've been currently running are going to drop down into the suspended state. When they're in suspended state, they don't use any CPU, and there's a very small memory footprint. So an application that might have been taking 80 megabytes of RAM will drop down to taking like half a meg of RAM. These things are essentially serialized or hibernated out to disk. If there is memory pressure, even for that suspended state, Windows will terminate these applications. They will actually shut them down and kill them. And that will be done with memory pressure. And when I start, go back to an app that's already suspended or terminated, that application is going to be running again. If it was a terminated app, it's going to be starting from scratch. So that has some implications for you as a developer. So with suspend, you have to keep in mind that Any system resources that are focused on the app are focused on the app that's, that the user is interacting with. Inactive apps have no impact on battery life, CPU responsiveness, that because those are all essentially hibernated out to disk. But there is a small memory footprint for suspended applications that facilitates kicking those back off very quickly so that the user really doesn't even know. In general, you have about 5 seconds as a maximum to restart or start an application. After that, Metro is going to say, sorry, your application's taking too long to start. So if your application needs to do something else in the background, you're going to have to do exactly that, run it in the background. Excuse me. Or do it asynchronously. When an application terminates, well, this is going to terminate if the system needs more memory, you know, when the user is switching something, they're closing down the app. There is a gesture, if you can swipe from the top to the bottom to terminate an app, the system shuts down or the application crashes. There's lots of reasons why an application is going to be terminated. The key point for you as a developer is you do not get notification about a termination. You only get notification about a suspension. So to get notification for a suspension or the resuming of your application, there is events, app.currentSuspending and app.currentResuming, and you just wire up event handlers in whatever the programming language is that you're using, and you're going to get those notification events firing in your application. So there's a few best practices that you should keep in mind when writing Metro apps for this new session management state of your Metro app. So when the user is running your app, you should be saving data incrementally as they go along. You know, one of the things that we learn from platforms like iOS is that, you know, users don't want to deal with files, they don't want to deal with file saving. If we can abstract that away, it's much better for people like my mom. So you want to save your data as you're going along. When the user is switched away from an app, when they've started another app, this is where you need to save something so that when that application resumes, perhaps being after terminated, it's going to look like it was never terminated to the user. So when you switch away from your app, what you're just saving there is the navigation, where you are in the application. So if you're, you know, within the Microsoft stock profile, I'm saving that kind of information so that when the application is terminated and restarted, it looks like they're left off exactly where they came from. When a not running app is launched, when it's activated for the first time, you just bring back the user and restore the session exactly where they left off. And when they resume a suspended app, you don't have to do anything because Windows Metro runtime is going to take care of restoring that user memory state to the way it was. Okay, a little bit about some of the components and the visual aspects that you have at your disposal. So there's a whole slew of built-in controls that you have access to, and these will, you know, provide you some productivity, but more importantly, they're going to add an element of consistency to the user interface, to the user. There's also different ways of presenting data. We have a list view, a grid view, a flip view. You get those built for you out of the box. There's nothing to say you can't come up with your own presentation format. It is XAML, and you can do whatever you want, but we have some of these built-in ones. There's also commanding surfaces. There's different ways for interacting with the user and letting them invoke some functionality. The most common one is the app bar, swiping from the bottom of your application. You have a number of icons that you can add there. We have tooltips, user controls, pop-ups, message dialogues as well. But the app bar is probably your primary place for allowing the user to interact with your application. Excuse me. In terms of coding applications in Windows RT, there is a new framework. There's a new SDK, if you like. There's a new library. You know, whether you're coding in C# or VB, the nice thing about .NET is we were using the same libraries under the covers. Well, there's a new library. It's called Windows RT. And it has, you know, fundamental components, media, devices, communication and data, user interfaces. It's very similar to the client profile of .NET. Again, it's not, you know, you're not going to be building MVC forms in a Metro app. Now, it's not completely different. This is part of Windows. This is owned by the Windows division of Microsoft. .NET used to be owned by the .NET SDK, and everything else was owned by the developer division. So now the framework components are actually baked right into Windows. And the nice thing for existing .NET developers is there's a tremendous amount of compatibility. A lot of things just work. The same classes, the same methods, the same signature. There may be small differences. And there's even a shim so that if you're taking some logic from an existing app, or maybe you've compiled into a portable library, Windows RT is going to map those calls into that may look like they were written against .NET APIs. It's going to retarget those or project those against Windows RT APIs. So you can get away with a lot. There's a lot of leniency in the APIs here. Okay, so with that, let's take a quick look at Visual Studio 2011 and what it looks like to code for that. I'm switching over to number two. I don't know if you guys have to do anything over there. It's plugged in. Come on, baby. There we go. Okay. So this is Visual Studio 2011. Or sorry, it's just called 11. That's the code name. I don't think they've officially announced that it's going to be released in 2011 or not. Sorry, 2012. Or it's called 11. It's not. Yeah, yeah. Time and space. I have no concept. This is controversial. I'm not going to lie to you. Somebody at Microsoft thought that it would be a good idea to take the Metro design principles and apply them not only to their PowerPoint decks that come out of Microsoft, but also every desktop application they write. You may not like this. You may have a very visceral reaction to this user interface. It's very flat. There's no colors. It's not that the projection guys have decided to project me in black and white. Somebody at Microsoft actually thought that this was a good idea, for better or worse. One, including the all caps. That's not some goofy style template I have. They think that that's a really good idea. So you guys are going to hate that. But there's a lot to like about Visual Studio 11 as well. One of the things that they've done is they've combined the Class Explorer or Object Browser with Solution Explorer. So I can navigate through my application. I can drill down into a class file, and I can see the list of classes that are in that. I can navigate down, and I can see even the members inside of it. Without even leaving Solution Explorer. You guys like that? Yeah, kind of cool. This can be very helpful. You can also, if there's a method you want to get to, let's see here. These are properties. Let me go to my groups page. So I've got a method in here called initialize async, and I can navigate right to that method, which is kind of cool. There's another interesting thing here. Let me just close. Well, let me show you this first. This is the XAML designer. And the XAML designer, anybody who has done XAML design in Visual Studio 2010 knows that it's not great. It's a lot better than it was in 2008. But one of the things they've done here is that they've taken the expression designer, or a lot of the elements of expression designer, and they've, I'm debugging, that's why I have all these windows open. Sorry, let me just shut that. So they've taken the designer, this is very, very similar to the expression designer. Expression designer is still a better place if you're doing design work, but one of the things in particular they've done is they brought across the property browser. So sort of a little more intelligent, better laid out property browser. It's not just sort of a standard grid of property and value, named value pairs. You've even got the search, so if I'm trying to find the font properties of something. Okay. There we go. Takes a little while. My machine's running slow for some reason. So we can see all the font properties that relate to that category. So it allows me to quickly navigate through all of this. And this is XAML. This XAML, as I said, is very similar to Silverlight XAML. It's not terribly different than WPF, but if you've done WPF, you'll find this a little more of a learning curve than if you're sort of a Silverlight developer coming to Metro. And in the code base, let me just jump back over to some code. One of the other things I wanted to show you is this preview mode, which is kind of neat. In preview mode, I can look at a class, and I can click on a class or a property or anything in Solution Explorer, and it's going to take me to that file over onto the right here. But it's not opening up a tab. It's sort of got this sort of temporary tab that's docked on the right, and as I navigate around to different things, it's going to reuse that tab. And until I actually double-click on something, it will then officially open it on the traditional tabs. So that's kind of a nice feature. And we talked about navigating to something very specific. So in my one piece of code that I just want to show you, Colin's going to talk more about the new async language changes in the latest version of C# and VB. You'll notice everything in Metro has to be async. So if you're going and getting data from something, you have to do it asynchronously, not unlike Silverlight. They force you down this path. Fortunately, there's new keywords like async and await and classes like tasks that make this a lot easier and cleaner to code for. So I just wanted to point that out. When I run this application on my machine, I'm not going to do it through the debugger. I'm just going to go over here. This is a sample app that we'll make available. It's the Metro Movie Finder, and it integrates with the Netflix APIs, which is a great sample app for this venue. So if I come in here, you'll see in this code that I'm actually loading the titles asynchronously. If I lost my internet connection? So you'll see that as they're loading in the background, you can see that counter increasing as more and more things come up. So you can walk through this code some more on your own when you get the sample, but it's just important to note that everything you do within Metro needs to be async. That's part of the Metro contract, and it's Microsoft's way of ensuring that things are highly responsive when it comes to building Metro apps. One other thing that I wanted to show you in Visual Studio 11 is there's new project templates for building Metro apps. You should note that you have to use Windows 8 to develop Windows 8 Metro applications. You can download Visual Studio 11 and build desktop applications or web applications on any of the supported operating systems, but if you're building Metro apps specifically, you have to do it on a Windows 8 machine. You can download the consumer preview today. So in the Metro style apps, you can see that we have different styles. We have a blank application, a grid application, which is the one that I was creating, split, and class library templates. And you have those for C#, C++, Visual Basic, JavaScript, all of the supported languages. So lots of great templates to help you kick off. And they sort of, out of the box, give you the Metro theme for your application. Okay, so let's whip back to the slides. And Bruce is going to demo the HTML style for you in just a minute. Just a few things to point out what we saw to summarize is that Windows RT APIs are all asynchronous. Okay, you have to code your apps asynchronously. But there's new keywords to make that a lot easier than it was in the past. The APIs are very rich. They're, you know, every bit as rich, if not richer, than the APIs that you had for the .NET client profile. And in many cases, there's a lot of compatibility. Access to the device, operating system services, components that are plugged in, sensors, everything you have access to. And it's baked into Windows. It's part of the operating system. It's not something built on top of it. They are core APIs. And they will feel natural if you're a C# developer. They'll also feel natural if you're a JavaScript developer. They just appear like a JavaScript library that you're adding to your project. So the different connotations and syntaxes that you're used to using for JavaScript will be supported. And again, same for C++. A little bit about compatibility. Although the WinRT framework is not .NET, it is very compatible with it. It looks similar, and there are some shims, so even when there isn't compatibility, they make it compatible to the legacy .NET APIs. The XAML itself, similar story. It's most similar to Silverlight XAML. Some Silverlight XAML you'll be able to bring in 100%. But just keep in mind that you're coding a Metro app for a new user experience that you may not have the same layout or UI components that you want in a Metro app. Okay, so I'm going to ask Bruce to come on up now and walk you through building an HTML JavaScript. Can you go back to them? We need to go to the demo machine again? Yeah.
Hello, there we go. Okay, so basically, as Barry has mentioned, the ability to be able to write your Metro-style application, C#, XAML, VB, still there. One of the things that got added with Dev 11 was the idea that you can actually do the same kind of applications, Metro-style applications, using JavaScript and HTML. This is a, I want to say it's a, I find it weird more than anything else as you take a look at this, because it's HTML, it's JavaScript, with just enough stuff to make it look and feel like you're working with the same kind of controls you would have been used to working. So if I just, this is a blog reader sample application, so I'm just going to launch this thing up. And it's going off, and it's grabbing. So this is, this, by the way, is when Barry was mentioning the styles of applications, this happens to be a split application. You can see that it's got built into it the same kind of style. You can actually drill down into any one of these things. You can, again, drill down into the details. Oh, we're just running into, there we go. You can see things starting to pull in. So from just a pure Metro stylish application, this doesn't look any different from the application you would have written if you were doing this thing in XAML, in C#, in VB. There's no visual difference to the user from the user's perspective. This is all about, there we go. It's all just about what you want to do as a developer. Now, the interesting part about it is to take a look at actually what goes in behind the code that you happen to see, the application that you happen to run. And basically, there's a couple of elements that kick in. So if I take, for example, pull up just an HTML page. Yeah. Okay, what you see here is standard HTML, right? I've got some links that I'm including, some scripts that I'm including. The body itself is a weird blend of what I think of as HTML and normal HTML and XAML, because you see this is log itself, the list of blogs, happens to be done up as a list view, or at least conceptually a list view with a template. You actually will notice as you pull across over here, I have this thing called a data win control that is using a WinJS list view component. So basically what you've said is, I want this div here to be a list view with no selection mode, doesn't allow me to select anything, and it will use this div as the template for the item. Okay, so this kind of, like I said, this goes back into, if conceptually you've been working with XAML, and you've been working with the templating that exists inside of WPF and Silverlight, this is conceptually doing exactly the same thing, in that you're just simply building out an area, and you're mapping another HTML component onto it, and you're letting the UI put the stuff together and make a Metro app out of it. The other piece you run into is on the JavaScript side. Okay, so again, here this is what I would consider to be normal JavaScript, right? If you're used to using jQuery and that kind of functionality, you'll notice that the notations are pretty much the same. But you end up with, you know, I've got a navigation component where if I'm going to invoke an item, I want to navigate to my split page, right? I've got setting the UI. So for my list view, I've got a data source that I'm setting, and I've got an item template that I happen to be setting. So this is all standard syntactically. It's all JavaScript. Now, one of the questions I get asked on a regular basis is, does this mean that I can take my Metro application to run this through a browser? And the answer is no. Right? You are not. This is a very specific kind of Java. It's using libraries that deal with WinRT. Browsers don't know from WinRT. I'm not going to be able to take this, run this on IE9 running in Windows or running in Windows 7, run it on any other platform and get it to work. This is very, very specific to the Metro-style Windows 8 kind of application. And then the other side of this is just simply, you know, normal cascading style sheets. Okay? So there's absolutely nothing unusual about what you're seeing in terms of the of the cascading style sheets. It's using all of the kinds of notation, syntax, functionality that you might possibly expect. Okay? So there's the reason for picking one over the other has got to do with familiarity. You're not going to run into a situation where you where you can do things inside of a JavaScript HTML5 application that you can't do inside of a C# XAML Metro style application or vice versa. This is about comfort. This is about the environment that you happen to feel comfortable with, the syntax that you happen to want to be able to work with. Okay? But like I said, don't think because you're using JavaScript HTML you're actually able to port it anyplace else. Pure on Metro, pure on at that particular level. So we're going to switch it back. That doesn't look like what I was expecting. Pardon? Not sure. I'm back now.
All right, thanks, Bruce. Being able to build applications using whatever development technologies or languages you're used to using on Windows for Metro is a good thing for developers.
Yeah.
There's not too many developers that will feel like they don't know what they're doing when it comes to building a Metro app.
And honestly, part of the reason is they're trying to get people coming from with a web world to be able to work with this particular environment as well. And
yeah.
That's exactly what it's for.
One of the questions I get is that, does this mean that I can write an HTML JavaScript client application and run it in Metro and on an iPad?
No, not so much.
Well, there might be JavaScript libraries that you want to bring in, some open source third-party ones, or that you've written yourself. You'll be able to use that JavaScript. But when you start interacting with the Metro user interface and those controls, those are very specific to Windows Metro. So it's more about reusing some software assets and getting up quickly to speed using your existing skills. One of the other questions is that we get is this notion of Windows on ARM. So Microsoft has announced and talked about their system on a chip strategy for building even thinner, even better battery life tablets than the one I'm using today. And the strategy for doing that on that is not just a software one, it's a hardware one as well. So ARM is what a lot of the tablets, chipsets are what a lot of tablets are running. Very efficient, very good on power battery life. Windows will run on ARM, and the name of it is Windows RT, which is kind of a goofy name for. But I think what's going to happen is you're not going to see people going out and buying Windows RT. You can't buy Windows RT. I think Windows RT still is for developers to say, I am building for Windows RT. So if I'm building for Windows RT, that means that I'm building on that runtime, I'm using those APIs, I'm building for Metro, I'm building touch first, an immersive application, and it's going to run on every possible Windows machine, whether it's an x86 or an ARM. If I'm building a desktop application that's running and compiled for x86, that's obviously not going to run on ARM. So building for Metro is a very important strategy for reaching a broad range of possible form factors and devices. The Windows RT that will ship on tablets will also ship with Office, so you won't have to go out and buy Office. There will be some desktop experiences like File Explorer, but unless you're going to go and recompile your app for ARM versus x86, then you're going to be stuck with building in Metro. And that's frankly where you should be building for.
Yeah.
I want to talk very quickly about the user experience in Metro. There are lots of traits for a Metro app. It's not just a technical thing about using the file new template or using the Windows RT framework. To be a Metro app and to get approval from Microsoft, you want to be able to leverage the Metro style. You want to be fast and fluid. You want to support the different displays, whether it's portrait or landscape, snapping or not. You want to be able to support the contracts if it makes sense for your application. You want to have a great tile that maybe does notifications as well. You want that application to roam across the cloud and feel connected, no matter if you're going from your tablet to your desktop experience, maybe sharing your data through that. And you want to embrace some of the Metro principles. There are some specific technical hurdles that you have to get certified for. I'm not going to delve into that so much, but I want to talk about what it means to be a metro app. And there's a great style guide that talks about all the different elements, you know, typography. Typography is actually used as a navigational indicator based on the font size. So as you're building your application, certain parts of your screen should be different font sizes to indicate hierarchy. Likewise, there needs to be a consistency of layout, which includes the white space or silhouette around the content of your application. That's also identified in the Metro Style Guide. And in the file new grid template or some of the other templates, wow, this is terrible, they also will implement those style guide standards for you automatically. So that's just something for you to consider. One of the other things to consider about your application is whether it's going to have a hierarchical navigation or a flat navigation. You could support either or. I mean, you don't even have to support either or. You could come up with something totally different if you want to. But these are the two common styles. You know, a flat one is going to have a very wide panorama that the user is focused on virtually at any given time. They'll also be able to pinch to zoom and to do the semantic zooming so that they can zoom out and get higher level categories, which is a nice option as well. The hierarchical style, the style guide will walk you through what it means to be in a hub, in a spoke, or a details page. There's sort of different guidelines about different layers of the hierarchy as well. You know, you're going to use that hierarchical pattern for apps with large collections that have many distinct categories or sections for the user to explore. And the flat pattern is going to be used when you have sort of multiple tabs or documents, you know, things like an instant messaging application where you want to slide back and forth quickly and efficiently. So there's, you know, that's one of the things to think about when you're designing your application. The other thing you have to think about designing your application is building for multiple views. So there is different minimum resolutions, and you have to think about portrait and landscape style. You don't have to, but, you know, most users are going to want to alternate depending on the scenario. This is the snap view that I wasn't able to show on my screen because of the resolution, but in this example here, we have two applications, and one of them is in snap view. And when you're in snap view, you're probably going to show less information. It's a totally different layout, maybe different number of command bars or app commands on the app bar. So you really need to think about how the user's going to use the application when it's snapped versus full screen. So there's a quick link for some design resources. That design guide includes all kinds of things that will help you design your application, and certainly Expression Blend is a great tool to help you design those as well. Just to sum up, I want to talk about the business opportunity in trends in terms of building for Windows. The market share is huge for Windows. As of December last year, there was 500 million Windows 7 devices. That's just Windows 7. And that number has grown since then. There's also another pool of devices running Windows XP that may also be powerful enough to run Windows 8 as well. But at the very least, there's 500 million machines plus that can run Windows 8. By comparison to Android phones and Android tablets, that's a very huge number. And even compared to iPhone and iPad, that's a very large number. Again, these are all numbers from December of last year. When you look at just the platforms themselves and you group up even phones and tablets, it's still a pretty big market share compared to the competitors. So a few things about the application store, what it means to you. One of the things is there's a lot of attention spent to the discovery of an application. There is an app store, a Metro app store, but it's also discoverable on the web. A really strong reach through 200 markets, 100 different languages, many different currencies that you can sell into, flexible business models, whether it's trial or paid or expiry or feature limited or tiers or subscriptions, lots of different models supported. The terms are very transparent. I'll talk a little bit about some of those. And out of all the other stores, it has the best economics, up to 80% revenue share. So in the Windows Store, you can have paid downloads, trials. You can also have in-app purchases. You can have subscriptions. If you don't like the in-store app purchase that or subscription service that Microsoft has, you can do your own commerce as well. So if you have your own commerce engine, if you're somebody like Amazon or Barnes & Noble, you can certainly do your own commerce engine. You're not beholden to the Microsoft commerce engine. You can also support it with advertising. There's built-in support for the Microsoft advertising platform, should you want to use that, but you can use any advertising platform. You're not limited. And you get a very robust analytical engine for determining who's trying your app, who's downloading it, who's purchasing it, et cetera.
And there's actually one thing, if I might add to this, that I found compelling, especially when compared to, say, the Apple model. You can create private stores. So you actually have the one of the things that I like about the way this works is if I'm a company and I'm developing an application for my employees, I don't want to put it onto a store where everybody gets to download it. There's the ability to put into that marketplace private stores, corporate-only stores, so that you've got control over who gets an application. Still a Metro app, still has to go through the same kind of approval mechanism, but you get to actually have it within your own organization. I think that makes it a little more compelling for businesses.
Yeah, and you can install Metro apps outside of the store. You don't need to hack your PC to install stuff. You don't have to jailbreak it. You don't have to violate the warranty. As long as you sign an application for a trusted security that's going to be trusted by your machines, and that can be done through group policy, it can be done through domain-joined machines. You can also do it with unjoined machines, like the consumer machine. There's a registry setting to specify certificates you're going to be trusting. You can deploy it with PowerShell. You can use things like System Center to deploy it. You can let the user install it on their own machines with a traditional installer. So lots of capabilities for enterprise deployment, just public deployment. A little bit about discovery. The entire store contents are web-enabled, so you don't have to go through the store application to find things. You can just browse applications through the web, and they'll be indexed by all the popular search engines. there is the store that will take you directly to the store from the web as well, so you can initiate your purchase or download there. You can also include meta tags in your HTML for your own website that will light up on the, I don't know if you can see it, the Get the App button. So with a metadata tag in your web page, with the Metro version of IE, you can automatically have a command bar lit up to let people download your application from your website as well. A little bit about the economics. Everybody gets 70% right out of the gate for your app, for new applications. Once your application generates over $25,000, you move up to 80%, which is the highest revenue share of all the stores. To put this in perspective, how many people want to make $10 million? Who's not putting up their hand?
There should be more hands than that.
Yeah. So to make $10 million in the Windows Store, this would be a successful app, but an application built at priced at $5 and sold to 0.5% of the ecosystem would generate $10 million in sales. That's pretty impressive. Okay. So the call to action is to go out and register with Microsoft. There's going to be a fee for the Application Hub, developer registration, whether you're an individual or a business. And right now, the store is not open for everybody. Right now, Microsoft is curating people and their applications ideas to be the first ones in the store when this hits RTM. So if you're interested in building an application in the Canadian marketplace, contact this email address. Let them know your idea, and they will get you fast-tracked and lots of pre-release support and assistance. And there's some Microsoft folks here today, so you can talk to them about that as well. All right? So hopefully you guys are energized and interested in building Windows apps. You have all the skills already, and there's a tremendous business opportunity in front of you.